Welcome to Embracing the Muse. I'm your host, Sally Jean Fox, the author of Meeting the Muse After Midlife. And I'm on a quest to discover and understand how we can live our richest, most meaningful, and creative lives at any age, and especially as we age. And I'll be interviewing island creatives to discover what they can share with us about the highs and lows, ups and downs, and possibilities of living and sustaining a creative life. Hi, friends. I am really excited and interested today to talk with one of my longtime Vashon friends and colleagues, Karen Dufour Deschamps. I know she'll be known to many of us here on Vashon, both for her creative spirit and also for how she supported the arts and the creative spirit in others for so many years. And more than that, designed her life to really support that creative work that she does. You know, often I like to say that your most creative work is your life. And whenever I talk to Karen, I feel that in spades. That not only is she interesting and engaged, but she's made choices in her life to follow what was important to her, to follow her dreams, to live out her strengths, to give to the community. And so it's a real pleasure to be able to bring you, Karen, today to the studio for this conversation, knowing that once upon a time, you too were a Voice of Vashon radio host.
Sally, thank you. Thank you for that lovely introduction. And I love how you said I've made choices, because I've made a lot of choices and some have served me better than others. And it is all about choice. And it's really cool to be back in this room.
Yeah.
I was trying to think, it's been 10 years. I was one of the early cadres of Voice of Vashon hosts, DJs. This was like, I think, our third or fourth place. I mean, we have been in so many buildings over the island. And, you know, Hawk Jones, of course, Jeff Hoyt, you know, Susan McCabe, Michael Golan Johnson. I'm just trying to remember. I'm going to miss other names of who we all. We used to all have our own morning scramble show.
Oh, it's the morning scramble you did?
Yeah, we called it morning scramble. I think that's the right one. Actually, in the early days, Susan McCabe and I went down to the ferry dock. We thought we would do this roving interview as people were in line to go to the ferries. And when we first got our way to broadcast it so that people in certain parts of the island could hear, we thought, okay, we'll do these roving questions while people are waiting in their cars to give them something to think about and engage. And it was so much fun. I remember it didn't last. I can't even remember now why it didn't last, but it was fun to work with Susan on this idea. Like, we were just creative ideas. This was before we were even a bona fide licensed station. This was on our AM, way before FM. But for probably over a year, maybe longer, I had my own morning edition show. Not morning edition, excuse me. Sorry, NPR. Morning scramble on Fridays. Every Friday from 8 to 12. Can you imagine, Sally, 4 hours?
That was a huge commitment. And also, as you and I were joking, you know, mastering the tech. And I mean, it's fun. It's great fun to talk to people. But behind the scenes, you also got to work the tech and the system and stuff. And I love that, Karen. You are really a part of Vashon history. You know, we should have a reunion at the station for people who contributed in the early days and really made the station what it is today, even though we've probably upgraded our equipment a little.
Oh, I walked in and it's like, wow, look at, I mean, this was all here. I was part of the team. I didn't do a lot of the building out. There were some serious volunteers who did the building of the studio. But I want listeners to know that 4 hours of time is a lot. I remember when I signed up, I thought, oh, no problem. I can talk. I'm a talker. 4 hours? Do you know how many minutes that is? When you hear
Don't
a segment,
make me think about that.
When you hear a segment, there is so much behind that. So then I had to figure out the programming. And, you know, what I loved was being able to bring in all these musicians that I was hearing, because Vashon was filled with musicians, but I didn't know, A, much about music, and B, I didn't know these musicians. And we were playing them, because back then we could play them. And I thought, I'll just bring them in and start talking to them.
That's so
fabulous. I had no idea how famous they were, how not famous. I just like, hey, you want to come and talk to me?
That also makes me think of the role that you've played over time as an appreciator of the arts. Because I think I knew you around the time you were in Church of Great Rain.
Oh, yes.
And you were having a blast. And I saw you out there and I was really engaged because we have certain things in common in our background. We've both been organizational consultants, facilitators, teachers, and all. But there you were on the big stage with Church of Great Rain playing, what was your character?
Ida Clare.
Ida Clare.
Thank you, Richard Rogers.
Yeah,
he created it.
And so you were both behind the stage helping because you were part of the production of the show. But then you were also out there, and I thought, how amazing is that? And I think that, isn't that kind of representative of you, that you've been both behind the scenes, helping, supporting, applauding, cheering, you know, rooting for Vashon's best, but you've also had the nerve to get out there yourself and host a radio show, be on the stage. You know, that's an amazingly varied creative path.
Thank you for that acknowledgement. What I most loved about Church of Great Rain, I did acting back in school, but what I really loved is I got to be around all these professionals. I used to say, and I still have said it, as I was the only non-professional that I was part of this troupe, especially in the early days. All of them had been paid writers, DJs, musicians, actors, and they let me in. And I got to play with, you know, that's what I love about Vashon, is that regardless of how famous, successful some of the members were, the players, we all played together. And,
yeah,
you know, and then when my character was developed, I got to really lean into it, which was really fun.
Yeah.
So
this is great, though, Karen, because, you know, this show is all about living a creative life. And I think sometimes people go to this place where you think, and I have too, I have to have a certain kind of training, or I have to be a professional, or, oh my God, there's so many professionals on Vashon, what can I possibly do? Which is a trap I fall into sometimes myself. But you were showing that, no. We are a great welcoming community. And if you really care and you have desire and you want to get your feet wet in something, there are opportunities. Sometimes it might look like volunteering. Sometimes it might be behind the stage, you know. Sometimes it might be working as a volunteer for the Vashon Island Film Festival, you know.
Right, exactly.
Which you recently did. But there's so many ways to get your feet wet. And then to get into the groove yourself that don't require professional degrees.
Exactly.
Or experience or whatever.
Matter of fact, I just want to do a shout out to David Gotze, because my last stint with Church of Great Rain, I think our last performance was last September, they sent me a contract. I said, a contract? I said, I just have a little part. They're like, oh no, we're paying everyone. And I mean, it was a very small stipend because I had a very small part. But that acknowledgement of showing up, of contributing, you know, I know that has been always a question and a conversation on the island of, and you had it with your last guest,
with Kat Eggleston,
about when do you volunteer? What do you expect? I fully expected just to volunteer. So it was like, oh, that was very nice. Icing on the cake. I just enjoyed doing it because I got to connect with the community and be part of this creative expression and laugh.
I didn't know that, but I'm delighted. And I know that, David Gotze and his wife, Janet McAlpin, who's been on the show, they're professionals.
Absolutely.
And they support the professionalism of others who work with O Space or with their productions. And yay for that, because like you were saying, and like I was talking with Kat Eggleston, so often we think, oh, you're an artist, you can just give your work, you know, to the local auction because you want to do it so much that you'll give it away. Or you're a musician, so come and give your talents for free. And that's all good, and people give hugely on this island, but there's another part that says, excuse me, how do you expect artists and creatives to support themselves? Especially if the world thinks it's a luxury good, and people who are having, quote, so much fun should be willing to do it for free.
And that really ties into the choice that you started off with your introduction. I was having so much fun doing this show every Friday morning, 4 hours, plus all the prep time, plus the post-production. My consulting business really suffered because I was loving this. I wasn't getting paid for it. I was having the connection. I was getting all my other needs met, but it was not supporting me.
I was going to ask you, because I know how much time it takes to run a consulting and training and facilitating business. So I was going, holy crow, how did you do that? And now I get the backstory was, well, there were trade-offs.
There were trade-offs. There were times that things were really good and times they weren't so good. I had just gotten a big contract with the state of Washington to do a lot of facilitation and training and OD work like you do. And then it all went away. Poof. And I wasn't ready for the poof, because that's not my skill set. I'm not very good at the marketing for the long term. Mm-hmm. And so I had to pivot. I had to pivot several times. You know, I left the island to do different jobs, came back.
Yeah, and I want to underscore that, because it's also one of the things that amazes and inspires me about you. Because it was, I don't know if you remember, but we talked around the time that you were pivoting, because the bottom had fallen out on the organizational consulting world. It had been a rich industry for a period of time. And then as the economy tanked, companies just said, here's something that we can cut back on. And they did. And so you had to figure out what next. And that taught me, just the way you went about it, taught me that there are many applications of creativity. And one of them is how you figure out your next step, especially when life is not going according to plan. And you did. And I was watching from the sidelines, applauding as you got that job in Calgary, was it?
Mm-hmm.
Yeah. And you drew from your Canadian and international background, and at the same time you were following this lead that you had in your interest in the Saudis, but the timing on that wasn't quite working, so you were having to pivot and pivot again and pivot again. But you kept going, and I was like, sister, I can't believe all the steps that you were taking to make it work, and you did.
Oh, thank you, Sally. That feels really, really validating. You know, I think when I listened back to your previous interviews with all the various creatives on this show, I thought, well, you know, I'm not a painter. I'm not an artist. I don't do all those things. But what I do is think outside the box. This is where the tenacity or my resilience. It's like, well, I want to keep my house. I want to figure out how to do it. And it's only me. So I have to be creative in how I go about doing it and take some risks.
Yeah.
I've always been a risk taker, less so as I've gotten older, which I love about this whole show, because it's about how do we stay creative as we age and things shift, right?
Right, right. And you know, one of the things that I think we're both about, but the show is about, is saying to people, we're all creative. We just use, you know, we show it in different ways.
Yes.
And when I look at you, I go, well, yes, incredibly creative in how you pivoted and designed your life and went on to do these amazing things. But heck, you don't become a coach or stand in front of the room facilitating a group, excuse me, without being very creative. I mean, that is a job for an improv artist.
Yes, totally, totally.
Like in every moment. And so people go, oh, well, you're an artist, you're creative, you paint. You go, no, 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 no. You sit with a difficult client and figure out how you're going to contribute to that person's next step. And your mind is probably going a mile a minute, like, I could go here, I could go here. I'm trying to listen. I'm trying to do. No. I've been in that chair. And it's an amazing creative occupation.
You know, that is so right. I'm calling a time when I had this contract and I was on the road literally 9 months. 9 months, I was on the road 4 days out of the week in a different city. I would either drive or fly. And some days it was five people. I was presenting the same content. Other days it was 200 people. And talk about having to pivot and be creative and think on your feet. Same content, different facilitation techniques, five people, 200 people. Everybody wants to feel heard. Oh, I loved it. Just like I know you love it when you're facilitating, right?
And speaking. I do. And
it's work and it's hard and it's exhausting at the end of the day. And it's so rewarding.
And it's one of those places where I know you've probably had these moments, but I think of myself sometimes when when you have those moments and it's rough and you know that the audience is either not there because they're all late, or, you know, you expected them to come and they're not there, or you look at the faces and you're going, oh, did somebody make them attend this session? Yes. Or whatever it is. And you and I think, Broadway performer, the show must go on. Doesn't matter what I'm feeling like, but they've paid to be here and they get a great show. And I use that a lot, actually, you know, when things don't show up the way that I might have liked or expected, just thinking, I'm a performer, I have to give them my best.
I love that, Sally. That's a great mantra. Yeah.
Yeah. Well, it was really this sort of personal story. When I launched my book, I did it at the Vashon Bookshop, but it was probably not good timing. It was the night after Halloween. It was late afternoon. I put the word out as best I could, but the bookshop was just getting back into the groove of doing things. And so I expected standing room only, and I have to tell you, it wasn't that. And so I looked out, and disappointment was leaching out of my eyes. And I kept trying, oh, don't look at me. I'm going to melt. You know, this is not what I wanted. This is not what I expected. But then I was able to look at the people who were there, and I loved them all. They were great listeners. And I thought, they have come out of their way to be here with me. They get 120% of what it is that I can deliver, because the show must go on. And that was a great lesson, because, you know, that's how life is, right? You know, we don't always get to say how it's going to present itself to us, but we can say how we present ourselves to life, you know?
Exactly. And remind me of the whole title, because isn't presence in the title?
It's in the spirit of the book, but it was Meeting the Muse After Midlife, A Journey to Meaning, Creativity, and Joy.
Right. But isn't presence somewhere in your website or in
Well, my business has been called Engaging Presence.
Well, see, that's perfect. So you were engaging presence with the audience. So, of course, you were living what you are.
I had to be that. I had to be that. And, yes. And you know, because I know you're also interested in neurological things and you've been doing some coaching in that regard. Sometimes we have to work with our minds, because even though I know all this, I preach all this, I coach this, I teach about this, there's that little gremlin in my brain going, oh, ma, 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 ma. You know, can we just go home and weep? You know?
Yeah, poor me.
Poor me. You know, it's still there.
Of course.
I'm trying to do a on-the-spot improvisational neurological tune-up.
Yes. Yeah, so in the work that I do where I bring mental fitness, we call those saboteurs. And so we take some brain activities so we can help shift, catch those saboteur thoughts, and then shift it and actually create a new neural pathway to stop it in the moment. And it takes work. I've been doing this practice for 5 years. And
wow.
I teach it with my clients, and we all get hijacked by those gremlins, as you call them. That's life. We're human.
Wow.
But there's so much excitement around neuroscience and all the work that's being done. And we understand the brain now with functional MRI studies. And I mean, I just love it. I just got off of a call with there was probably 200 coaches on this community, because there's 5,000 of us trained from all over the world. And we're there with the founder and the other senior coaches. And it's amazing. And I know you've had other people on your show who bring in different modalities as well. Is what can we do to make ourselves fully present in any moment, and how we support others in doing it. And there's a variety of different ways. And that's what keeps me engaged.
Oh, that is, see, this is so exciting how you keep learning and adding to your toolbox in a way that both expands you and hugely benefits your clients. But for me, and this wasn't a part of the consulting world that I knew about 20 years ago, but it feels like how we use our brains and our neurological systems is pivotal today. Because between the pandemic and this craziness that's out there, you know, it's so easy to get whacked out. Or I write a lot. I have a blog, and I'm saying, are we all in brain fog? Because I feel like some days it's just doing as much as I can to cut through the anxiety, to cut through the brain fog, to be able to function in this crazy, sometimes dystopian feeling world.
Yeah. And then, you know, if I was in a coaching relationship with this conversation, I would say it's always a choice. Where can we see the gifts and opportunities amidst all this craziness? And how do I keep myself sane and grounded? Because that's the only thing I can control, right?
Is that myself. Is so great.
You can't control the, you know, the orange crazy guy in the sky, because he's going to continue to do that. So what do I need to do? Yeah. What choices do I make? And there's now so many different techniques to help us get regrounded to really do that.
Yeah. No, this is so timely, Karen. And how exciting. I hope that somebody's listening going, I need that, because, you know, I can hear it and go, I need that, because I've explored movement. I've explored sound for me.
Yes.
Sound, I'm always preaching about humming and singing and moving.
And those are all, they're all neural stimulators in the region of our brain that keeps us calm, creative thinking, gets it out of the gremlin saboteur thinking. So you're doing all the right stuff. And there's just even more techniques.
How great.
And more structure to help someone, especially if you're somebody who works well within a structure. Like, I know I like self-imposed structure. So this program comes in an app. I listen to it. I can journal in it. When I'm with my clients, I have a dashboard. I can see how their journey is. So it creates a structure to support one another.
That's fantastic. Now, you worked for years with Saudi, particularly Saudi women. Are they your clients now, or are you more international with, you know, a whole range of folks?
Yeah. So to clarify, I actually worked with Saudi women and men.
And men.
When I first started, it was actually men. I did then have a program with Saudi women. It was a women's leadership program that I helped co-create, co-design with another American woman. I'm Canadian-American. And we delivered it. And that was quite groundbreaking back in 2014 in Saudi Arabia. And to answer your question, I still have some Saudi clients. I have both male and female, because our world is you know, remote. It's, you know, everybody's on Zoom, and we all had to pivot during COVID. And I also have still clients in Oman. Some of them are Omani. Some of them are other expats. And what I realize is I really love working with expats, because we have common experiences, right? Having been an expat and helping. I'm working with a couple women right now who've been in Oman for almost as long as I was in the Middle East, and they're pivoting, they're reassessing where they want to be. Do they still want to be there? And, you know, we all bring, you know, as coaches, we bring all of our life experience. And yet at the same time, we're helping the clients figure out what they want to do and where they want to go. And it's always so illuminating for myself when I hear their stories and how they make trade-offs with the various values, you know?
Fascinating. And then I'm also thinking, what a journey you've been on, because you had how many years in the Middle East as a consultant?
So I was an employee, I was a contractor, it was a temporary contract. And then I have these little gigs. Some of them were remote. So altogether about 10 years, 8 physically and 10 in total.
Right, right. And did you leave because things were changing over there, or because it was just time to get home?
Well, actually, unfortunately, my last stint over there was quite painful in leaving. I went in October 2023, 2 days after the Gaza war broke out, after the attack. And I had been asked to speak. So I had a speaking engagement, and I went there, and I had lined up other work
and
or potential work.
Where was there?
That was in Muscat in Oman.
Okay.
And I was reconnecting with all my old clients when I had been an internal executive coach with this company for 2 years. So I had quite a great network. I was connected with the coaching organizations, the chapters, both in Oman and in Saudi, a little bit in Dubai. And so I was just out. I had an Omani local in the community who we were working together. He was kind of we were co-coaches in marketing. And what I didn't pick up, and, you know, as an intercultural coach, I say, how did I not pick this up? There was so much anger and angst against not only Americans, but especially the Western world of what was happening. This is in the early days, and look at where we're at now.
Yeah.
And so very typical culturally, people would agree to meet with me. They would be gracious or not meet with me. And what I finally got from some of my longtime trusted Saudi and Omani clients is like, Karen, we cannot contract with you. And, you know, I remember going to the U.S. Embassy because I had colleagues there, and I said, is this just me? And they're like, no, we're getting this from a lot of American businesses. This is early on in the Gaza war. So I had this big contract all lined up for January 2020. And then it all just poof went away. So one of my choices was I stayed too long. I should have just, like, you know, cut bait and come back, because it was the first time I went there without a long-term paid contract. Oh, I had always gone there with a contract in hand, and then I decided then if I was going to stay. So financially, it was a poor choice, and it was also a really sad choice because it was an example of, you know, we pride ourselves that when we come into a consulting gig or even as a coach, it's who we are. We bring all of ourselves, right? And that is true. And they're always going to see us in a certain way. They cannot not see us. So even if they wanted to say, yes, we wanted to hire you, they just couldn't, because there was so much of that cultural piece. And I heard of stories that I had never experienced before of just outright rage against Americans while I was there. So, you know, so I came back in March of 2024, and I have not been back. I don't know if I'll go back. I'm not ever closing that door. And it was a real, and also rules had changed for running businesses, and there was just a lot of things that have changed, right? And we have to pivot with the change, and it's also a part of the world that if you're not in there all the time, even though I have a lot of contacts there and have a lot of ways of getting information, it's a culture where you have to be immersed in to really know what's going on.
Mm. Wow, what a story. Because I know that as a consultant and coach, it already takes a lot to just be there in the sort of personal dimension, here and now, really supporting people. And I know that you're really tuned into the organizational dimension, but you then had to work against the whole backdrop of the cultural dimension. And not only that, the history of years of intergenerational trauma that go back how long? You know, centuries.
Yes.
And so all of that, and there's only so much that we can manage, you know, or handle. It's enough to be present to one person, let alone have to stand in for and somehow respond to that amazing intergenerational trauma that is so difficult.
Yeah.
And it breaks my heart. It, you know, it's like, oh my God, you know, we're just barely beginning to heal over centuries of intergenerational trauma in the Middle East. And then we put gasoline and lit a match again. Mm-hmm, mm-hmm. You know, how could this be? And now it's going to be how many more decades, if not longer, to begin to heal? I don't think it'll happen in my lifetime.
I concur. I agree. And what we know is the international or the inner trauma that we all carry with ourselves, regardless of where we're at, it's just different, but it's all there. So another aspect of my coaching practice in the last, say, 6 to 9 months has been really becoming a trauma-informed coach, mm-hmm. and bringing that to the work I'm doing, because we're seeing it and people are naming it and it's normalizing to say, I've had trauma, I want to work on it, which is great. I mean, it just shows how the coaching profession has really grown and evolved to say it's different than therapy, it complements it, and there is so much more we can do. Again, that whole brain connection.
I love the dimensionality of that, because I think I made mistakes as a coach. you know, 25 years ago. Because
we all did.
Yeah. I would push people to be their best selves. The fact that I would push people and to have breakthroughs and to envision their lives and all. And I walked over the top of trauma that was probably there in some of my clients. And I wish I hadn't done that.
Mm-hmm.
You know.
And that's also how the coaching profession was training us back 25 years ago, Sally. I mean, I started being a coach in the 90s. I took a variety of training. I didn't really get certified and credentialed until 2017. And that's when a lot of this new insight and research started to come out. And now it's just exploding. So we worked with what we knew and how we were trained. And
yeah, that's what we could do. And how interesting to watch how it's all evolved.
Exactly.
Amazing. So what was it like? I mean, I would have thought, oh my God, here you had worked so hard in the Middle East and you'd really created an amazing body of work for yourself. And then you can say I blew it because I didn't quite get the cultural context, but really the whole problem was so big. It was so much beyond, you know, I think anybody's ability to quote, handle it. And so you were forced to leave again and come back to your lovely island that loves you. But what was that like? That was another
so hard.
Pivot.
Yeah? It was so hard. And it's interesting because the assumption in that question is I just came back as Karen. But we change when we travel and we live in other cultures.
Right.
And I came back and I had already been changing over these 10 years of having this amazing experience. I saw the transformation with women in Saudi from 2014 to when I went back in 2018 and women were choosing to be covered or not, for example. You know, women's empowerment is a thing in Saudi. When people say, oh, these poor women. No, they're not poor women. They are empowered. And so I'm always trying to educate people on our stereotypes. But for me, what was so hard is how much I had changed. And so, you know, doing the reverse cultural assimilation. So I'm coming back to my own culture, but I'm not feeling like I fit in because so much has changed within me. And then coupled with that is I was having all these health issues, which had actually started 4 years prior, but we weren't really clear what they all were at the beginning of COVID, just because it was so hard to get diagnosis and see doctors. And because of all my travels from Africa, Southeast Asia to the Middle East, they were always sending me to the UW trying to diagnose that these were funky, rare diseases from this region, if this was causing all of it. And no, it's my heart. it's not these funky diseases. So it just took a long time. And I now have a great cardiology team, as well as a team here on Vashon. And I feel so, so blessed to have all this support. But a year ago in 2024, I mean, I was both depressed and I was physically not well. And I just had my third heart procedure a couple months ago. And I had my follow-up with my cardiologist. And I said, oh, I could mow my own lawn. I said, this is a benchmark. I can mow my own lawn. I still get a little out of breath, but I can do it. I couldn't even do that a year ago.
Wow. And it gives you pause because when our bodies are out of shape, like I can say, oh, I just want to, you know, it wouldn't be so bad to be bedridden because I would just read great books and watch great videos and inform myself and have conversations. But, you know, excuse me, but if you feel like shit, I think I can say that on air, that your zest for living.
You don't have any energy for reading good books and appreciating good films, and you don't want to have conversations with people. Leave me alone.
Exactly. It's really much more difficult.
It is very difficult.
Much more
and
difficult.
I was still, people might be surprised when they're hearing me say this because people know I'm always riding my bike around. Well, in the early days when I was going through all of this, if I could just ride, you know, from one end of Beale to the other and not totally be out of breath, that was a win for me. If I could go to the pool and just do gentle water walking, that would be a win for me. You know, I'm now up to my 40 minutes. I can do a vigorous, you know, water aerobic, water walking, not as vigorous as I did 20, 30 years ago when I started at the pool. I've been going to the pool for 30 years.
Right.
First thing I did when I came to the island, actually. Yeah. And I'm so grateful for e-bikes. I got one of the first e-bikes when Aaron was with Vashon Adventures. And, you know, I can now do an hour and a half bike ride. I still don't go super fast, but I can do it now.
Yeah.
So it's, you know, keeping a creative life when we're aging means we have to adapt, means I have to adapt. And it also means I have to accept these changes. And I got to tell you, it's really hard because I've always seen myself as so active and full of energy. And there's some things I physically can't do anymore.
I get it. I get it. Sometimes it feels like a dirty little secret that I talk to with my friends who are 70 plus or whatever. Like, have you lost energy? Yes. But I don't want the world to know that because I don't want to be downgraded. You know, like, should I ever work in an organization again? I don't want to be the one who's, you know,
invisible
or downgraded because she doesn't have the energy. But I look at what I did before, the flights I could get on, the early morning consulting I could do, and I go, no, can't do it.
Yes.
Not anymore.
I measure how, okay, am I ready to go back to the Middle East? I have to walk from Dubai main hub airport to catch my connection to Muscat or Riyadh. And it's a long walk. And I remember how long it took me before and thinking, okay, am I ready to do that?
Wow.
Because walking is a hard impact. So I still get out of breath.
Yeah.
I mean, there's ways to get around it. And it makes me pause and think, do I want to do that or not?
Mm-hmm. Yes, I sure get it. I sure get it. Yeah. And it's also profound because all of us in some ways have to ask the question, how do I live fully with what I've got, knowing that I may not have what I had before, but that was before, and this is now, and this is the only time that I get to live is now. So how do I live fully into this?
Yes.
Which I think is a fabulous question and not necessarily an easy one, you know.
Yeah, and it's one that I ponder when I had so much unknowns around my health. Of course, we all look at our own mortality. And I'm only 66. I say only because I know you've interviewed.
I got a few years on you, too.
Yeah, and I know you've interviewed more senior creatives here on the island. Yeah. But when you have serious health challenges, at least for me, I really start questioning this. And, you know, I come from not the greatest genes. There's days I think, am I even going to live to 70? So if I'm 66 now, I want my next 4 years. And I'm in my head, I'm thinking I'm going to coach until I'm 70. I basically say I'm going to coach until cognitively I can't track a client's conversation anymore. That's my, you know, I'm hoping somebody's going to tell me. Karen,
and I'm hoping it's beyond 70.
I hope it's beyond 70. But at least in my head, I'm like, I want to keep on doing it because I love it.
Yeah,
and I know it feeds me. And we know that when we are creatively fed, we're going to live longer as well, too.
Absolutely.
And so, and it just made me say, okay, what do I need to change in my life? So one of the big changes is I am moving off the island.
Which I hate.
Thank you. But my property is too much for me to manage. I just can't do that and do everything else because I don't have the energy. I don't have the stamina that I used to. And so I have to downsize, you know, but I still want a garden, still want a little bit of a lawn to mow, but not much.
Right, right. Well, you say that with a smile. And I think so many of us are confronted by similar decisions. How long can I stay here? How long can I keep doing the no that I love? And then the reality of, okay, if I can't do that, if I have to sell my property, are you moving back to Canada? Is that still the plan?
I am. And, you know, it's interesting because a couple months ago when I was not doing well after I had a procedure in February and there were some issues. And I remember talking, I love Dr. Tom Erdman here at CIMAR.
Yeah.
Everybody loves
him. Kudos, Tom. Yay, we love you.
And I remember saying, I need a reality check. Should I be looking into condo living? You know, like I'm going to go from all of my property, two houses. He goes, no, you don't need to do that. Just, you know, I know a garden really sustains you. Just downsize. And I couldn't even visualize it because I was feeling so lousy at the time. And now that I'm feeling so much better, I remember dropping him a note saying, I'm so glad you planted that idea saying, no, you are going to feel better. It's just going to take time.
Wow. Oh, precious. We are so blessed to have some doctors on the island who really listen. Thank you.
Yes.
Thank you. Thank you. Yeah. Stay here forever.
I know. Angela London is the other one. She's my naturopath.
Yeah.
She's been my naturopath since 2007.
Well, you're lucky, because you started early, since she doesn't maintain the regular practice that she once did. But
right.
Here
right.
on the island.
Yeah. I just went up to see her, though, up in her Ferndale office.
Yep.
We usually meet via Zoom.
Fantastic.
But, you know, she met with me when I was in Saudi. This is pre-COVID.
Oh.
And we did Zoom. I don't know if we did Zoom. We did something. Yeah, I guess it was Zoom.
Right.
We met then.
Well, as we begin to wrap up, I want to ask you, well, first of all, if you'll come back before you leave the island, because we still have so much to talk about.
Oh, thank you, Sally.
This is a delight to talk to you.
Yeah.
But also, what's next on your creative path? I know, like, this past weekend, you were out there supporting the film festival weekend, which is fantastic.
I am going to really miss our theater, you know, our Vashon Theater, you know, my 10-year stint as the Oscar MC, working with the Vashon Film Society. You know, I'll never forget that little news clip we had that time on, it was Q13 News, that Eileen and Gordon Wolcott saw the news with us playing our Oscar party, which prompted them to think about, do we want to go and buy this theater? I mean, that's how it all started, is they saw this crazy community.
Oh, that's
and they
so
thought, wow,
great.
They really love this theater. And then unbeknownst to us, they started conversations with Carolyn, who was the owner at that time. And look at where we're at with this theater, and look at how much they've done. So I'm really going to miss our film. I love that I can just, you know, leave my house in 5 minutes and get to the theater and just go in there at any time. So I'm going to miss that. And I'm sorry, I lost track of your question.
Just how are you going to, what's ahead on your creative
path?
Oh,
so my creative path is, once I sell the house, I've been so focused on doing all of that, is I've been in the process of writing my memoir of my years working as a white woman with privilege in the Middle East, coaching Arab leaders. And there's so much to dispel in terms of what I learned, but also to help understand and dispel some of the stereotypes a lot of people have. And I've been just trying to figure out how the best way to approach it. I've been working with a memoir coach, and I'm now turning it into a hybrid so that I can bring in the intercultural coaching work that I've been doing with Philippe Rosinski, who's this amazing coach in Belgium, along with the work of PQ and the mental fitness, and put those in to help explain why I did some of the things I did, why I felt the way I did, to help explain that whole experience. So it's not just a memoir, my story, an autobiography. It's also a way to help people think, because that's what I love about coaching and training and facilitating, is we help people think and maybe make a different choice.
Well, I look forward to you having a little space and time in your life, because I think that will be a fascinating book. And I know the kind of effort that it takes.
I know,
so,
you know. And
I
so
do know.
I need a lot of time in my space.
Yeah, you do. You do. But hopefully it'll be very soul-nurturing time, because if it's just another project, really, it's almost too much. But when the process of writing actually fills our souls,
yes,
which is my experience, then it's doubly worth it.
Yeah.
You know, it's not just a thing to do.
But, yes.
And this will be a great book, and such a unique one. I can't wait.
Thank you.
I can't wait
either. I was revisiting some of my chapters the other
day.
I was like, okay, how is that shifting from even what I wrote a couple years ago? Because it's been a work in progress for over 10 years.
Yeah, yeah. Well, thank you so much for coming in today. I know you have a busy life, and I also want to just thank you for all the support you've given to other artists, creatives, because you were, I was learning about all the art that you have bought over time for your guest house, and all the ways that not only have you been hugely creative, but you've recognized that in others and supported their work.
Mm. Thank you,
which
Sally.
Makes you sort of a double header. know, and I super appreciate it. So please remember, you heard it on air. You know, you're coming back before right. you leave the island, because you will be leaving a big hole.
Thank you. And thank you, Sally, for this opportunity. I love these questions. This has been great to be interviewed by a fellow coach, facilitator, and all of those things that we have in common. So thank you so much.
Thanks so much for listening. I look forward to being back soon and bringing you another conversation with an island creative who can show you how it's possible to embrace your muse and live your richest and most creative life. Till then, thanks for joining us, and thanks to Voice of Vashon, 101.9 FM, for hosting this show. I'm your host, Sally Fox, and I look forward to being with you soon.